everybody. Welcome to Two Chairs, No Waiting, your Mayberry podcast. This is episode number 55, Rodney Dillard Interview Part 2. This podcast is brought to you by Weaver's Department Store. Drop by Weaver's and pick up any kind of Mayberry item you might want. We got DVDs, you know, T-shirts, all kinds of stuff. So drop by Weaver's and pick them up. Podcast is also brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you for your donations. Hey, everybody. Here we are with episode number 55. We're going to be talking to Rodney Dillard a little more. To remind you, Rodney is the guitar player of the Darlin Boys. So we're going to be hearing from him. And in this episode, we're going to talk a little bit more about the career of the Darlins. So not the Darlins, I'm sorry, the Dillards. So we're going to hear more about how they got their start, you know, when they went to California, just that kind of information, and about some of the impact that they've had on the music that you all listen to over the years. You know, there's all kinds of musicians that were influenced by the Dillards, and you may not know that if you're just fans of the Andy Griffith Show and not fans so much of the Dillards. If you haven't realized the impact that they've had, I think you're going to really enjoy this. So we're going to get right into it with Rodney Dillard. So here's Rodney. Well, you've mentioned before when I've heard you talking about this, you know, that you just thought everybody had it that easy when they got out there. That you know, you were able to get on the Andy Griffith Show, and you kind of got picked up for a record deal and all that kind of stuff.
Got a record deal and signed with a major agency. You know, you just don't do that. And here we were signed with William Morris, which is the largest agency in the world, and a major label. And then the next thing you know, we were auditioning for Andy Griffith, a hot television show at the time.
About how long had y'all been out in California when that actually happened?
That's really, you know, it's really kind of gray area for me. I can't remember, but it was a very, very short time. It doesn't seem very long at all mm-hmm. that we were on the Andy Griffith Show, because we were staying at someone's house because we had no money, mm-hmm. and they put us all up there. And the guy Travis Edmondson was the guy's name. They had a folk duo back there that was pretty hot, and they were doing quite well. And he let us stay at his house, and I don't know how long that happened, but we started meeting different people in the business, like Albert Grossman, who handled, I think, Bob Dylan and a bunch of people. And we met all these people coming through that house at the time. And uh-huh. and I think that helped us a lot, you know, sort of get a jump on everything. Just amazing.
It is amazing. You know, when you've told that story so many times about how you kind of got on the you've mentioned that, I think jokingly, when they asked you about the record deal, you wouldn't know how much you had to pay them, basically.
Well, that wasn't a joke. Because the last record, the first record deal Douglas and I made, it cost us. Of course, you know, back in those days, there was all these guys, you know, say, we'll make you a star for $2,500, you know. And all we wanted to do was release a record. And so it was one of those, we'll record you and you pay us $500 and we'll give you 50 records. One of those deals, you know. And I figured that's just the way the record companies work. But we learned differently after being in L.A. for a couple of weeks, that they actually paid you, you know, to mm-hmm. do what you did and signed you to a we signed a three-record contract, I think. You know, wow. Three records, mm-hmm. three-album deal with Elektra. And then left Elektra and went with Capitol and came back to Elektra for another three-album deal. So,
wow. Well, I don't think, you know, a lot of your bluegrass fans probably know a lot about your bluegrass music, but a lot of the Andy Griffith Show fans may not realize just how big. Of course, well, you've been inducted into the International Bluegrass Hall of Fame, so they should pick up on that. But, you know, I don't think they realize what kind of influences you guys had in just the music that we all listen to now, you know, because and reading through it, you know, you the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, they give you credit of being an influence. The Eagles, the Birds, Dan Fogerty, mm-hmm. Linda Ronstadt, Elton John. I mean, Ricky Skaggs. It's just you guys have really had an impact on just music in general.
Well, it's, yeah, as I look back, all these kids were coming into the music scene there in Los Angeles. In fact, I was the one that encouraged Don Henley to go to Los Angeles with his band at the time. His band was called Felicity, and they were out of Texas. And I said, well, if you don't try it, you'll never know, you know, you'll always wonder. Wow. And they went out there, and of course, the rest is history. But it's odd to be inducted into the Bluegrass Music Hall of Fame and be in the Who's Who, Rolling Stone Who's Who of rock and roll.
Hey, honestly, not buttering you up or anything, but that really shows the talent you guys had. You guys, people may not realize either that the songs, like on the Andy Griffith Show, There's a Time and Dooley, Doug's Tune, all those songs, you guys, those were your songs. They weren't just bluegrass that had been around for years, which I think a lot of people, because those songs are so prevalent now in bluegrass music, everybody just thinks, oh, that those are just bluegrass songs. But you guys actually wrote those.
Yeah, I know sometimes our songs get recorded and then they put public demand, they put PD like it was an old tune and say, no, wait a minute. But we set out to write our own music and sort of do our own thing within the idiom of what that music was. And then, of course, you know, a natural evolution for a lot of people is to experiment with other things, you know, not experiment, but you know, things that come to you that you want to do. It's a natural process to want to expand what you do and play music the way you feel it as much as anything. And obviously that's how music develops and changes and moves forward, is you just add what your frame, you know, what you know to it, and maybe you come up with something a little bit different that people are interested in listening to, you know.
Right.
And a lot of people have done that. You realize that all the masters, all the great composers, like Mozart and those dudes, they did it all. Everything from then on was just a characterization and texture.
Right.
Because all those phrases and all those things, you'll find them in their music, in the masters, you know.
Wow.
But it is. So it just becomes texture and characterization of how you interpret and put it together.
You guys did things with bluegrass that was, I don't know, controversial or different. Were you use actually some electrical instruments?
That's an understatement.
Well, at the time they were. Yeah, I mean, you guys were pushing the envelope, and that's kind of what you're talking about, just expanding your musical
horizons.
Influences.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was, and it wasn't in any intent on taking away from the music that was already established. My goodness, when you look at it, look at what the guys who created bluegrass music were actually experimenting themselves.
Right.
For instance, when Monroe picked up the mandolin and started playing blues licks on it, and the mandolin wasn't exactly invented in Kentucky. You know, I think it goes back a little further than that, doesn't it?
Right.
So what was he doing? Was he experimenting with the music?
Sure.
He was experimenting with the way he felt it and the way he conceived what he wanted to do. So that's all we were doing. It wasn't we were grinding up a sacred cow for hamburger. It was just, we were just moving on. And he did that, and Earl Scruggs did that with the banjo. Mm-hmm. And when Monroe heard Earl Scruggs, he thought, boy, this is going to kick my music, you know, up. And when he first got Earl Scruggs to play banjo on the Grand Ole Opry, Earl Scruggs got a standing ovation.
Really?
Yes. So you see how the music all comes together in different parts and becomes something else.
Sure. Well, and the music is, don't get into music. But it's something you feel too. It's something you know what sounds good and you know what sounds good together, and you start playing with that. I'm assuming that's what you were kind of doing.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what we were doing. To go back to what we were doing, I wanted to experiment. You know, bluegrass has certain rhythms. R&B has certain rhythms. Blues has certain rhythms, and I just want to combine the traditional harmonies of bluegrass with R&B rhythms and a 25-piece orchestra, which we did on Copperfields and Wheatstraw Suite. And it was just taking those and taking harmonies and doing these transitional things with them and changing them not changing them, but just doing different voicings with them. I wouldn't consider it changing because harmony is there. It's like the statue. There's a big hunk of rock. There's a statue in there somewhere.
That's right.
That's the way we were approaching the music, you know. It was just, the traditionalists were a little bit concerned that we were actually taking the music away from what they thought it should be. And you're going to have that sort of controversy in anything you do.
Well, we've seen it more modernly, with country music, a little bit closer to now. You know, country music has changed to be more what pop music used to be. You know, a lot of the country is that, so.
Singer, songwriter, all that stuff and all those rhythms, if you go back and kind of A-B it to what was going on, it used to be called country rock.
Right.
And with us, some of the things we were doing, and then the Burrito Brothers and the Byrds, then it took on just a little more, I don't know if it's sophistication, but it all changes. It all keeps moving and changing. It's if music stayed the same and wasn't mercurial, it would probably die.
Right.
Can you imagine if guys just beat on logs and rocks together?
And never picked up an instrument. Yeah. Whoever used to just play those drums got mad when somebody made a string of some kind, I'm sure.
Yeah, or all of a sudden blew into a limb and it made a noise.
That's right.
Wait, you can't add that to our music. You'll change it.
That's right. Wow, there we had it, folks. That's Rodney Dillard of the Darlin' Boys, the Dillard Band, the Dillards, I should say. Wow. A lot of those things I don't think many Andy Griffith Show fans think about, because we think so much of the Darlin' Boys and how much we enjoy them and how funny that is on the show. And, I don't know that we appreciate just how talented that the Dillards, who play the Darlin' Boys, really are. And have been, and the influence that they've had on so many people in music. And I hope you have enjoyed that. I really enjoy hearing about their career and just the neat things that they've been able to do. So next week, we're going to hear a little bit more about that. We're going to hear some of the things that they've, some movies that they've been in. Believe it or not, the Darlin' Boys have actually appeared in some movies you might not realize. And some other things that the Dillards have been able to do. And I hope you really are enjoying this. I know I certainly did in my conversation with Rodney. And from some of the feedback, I think you guys are enjoying it as well. Speaking of feedback, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at floyd@mayberry.com. You can call me at 888-684-8415. And I'd love to get some comments from you guys about the Dillards interviews or anything else that you might have on your mind. You can also drop by our Facebook page at facebook.com/twochairs. And you can leave comments there. There's so many ways to communicate with me. If you'd like to, I would love to hear from you. Please take an opportunity to do that. We again want to remind you about our sponsor, Weaver's Department Store. .com. So drop by there. Christmas is coming. And, all those Mayberry fans in your life, they need something. You know, I'm sure there's something that they'd love to have. So drop by there and see if you can't find something that they'd like. Folks, I want to thank you for listening and look forward to seeing you next time here listening to us at Two Chairs No Waiting, your Mayberry podcast.